Blog Talk Radio.
Absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Once again to this fine Sunday morning out on the East Coast. It's 10 a.m. and I am JT, a.k.a. The Master, and you know what time it is. This is The Master Plan. The number to call in is 347-637-3220. 347-637-3220 is a place to be if you want to talk to Master P. That's me. Master Plan. That's right. Got a chat room sitting out there for you. If you'd like to lay your knowledge up in that chat room, ask a question, make a comment, or put a statement in there. Whatever you put in there is what you're going to get out of it. You put nothing in, you get nothing out. You put some smack in, you may get some smack out. It's up to you what you do with that chat room. Anyway, big day today. Big day today. First day of February. And it's the final day of the football season. The final day of 2014/2015 NFL season, which marks the Super Bowl. Super Bowl 49. Wow. Super Bowl 49. And is it going to be an historic Super Bowl? One way or the other, people, it's going to be a historic Super Bowl. Now check this out. And I'm just all these thoughts have been running through my mind ever since I found out who was going to be in the Super Bowl. You have a three-year quarterback, very young quarterback, that won the Super Bowl last year, and Russell Wilson. He could be the first, and I know people are going to say, well, why do you got to bring this up? Because it's the first. That's why I have to bring it up. He could be the first African-American quarterback to win back-to-back Super Bowls. He could be the youngest quarterback, regardless of race, to win back-to-back Super Bowls. That's what can happen today. That's one of the things that can happen today. Another thing, regardless of what happens, Tom Brady is the only quarterback to have gone to 6 Super Bowls. 6. And he'll join the elite. There are only 2 other guys that have done it, quarterbacks, that have won 4 Super Bowls. The other 2 is Terry Bradshaw, back when the Steel Curtain and the Pittsburgh Steelers were extremely dominant, and Bradshaw was the quarterback. They won 4 Super Bowls. And, of course, my favorite quarterback, and I still think he's the greatest quarterback of all time, Joe Cool. I'm not a San Francisco 49er fan, but I am a Joe Montana fan, and he's won 4 Super Bowls with the San Francisco 49ers. With those 2 guys, Tom Brady would be an elite company winning 4 Super Bowls, but he's already gone to 5. This would be his 6th Super Bowl. That's an unbelievable career for anybody. It's hard enough to get into 1. Damn near impossible to get to 2 for the most part. 3 is unheard of. 4 is astronomical. 5 is worldly. And I hate to say it like this on a day like today, but 6 is godly. But I still think Joe Montana, and it's up for debate whether you want to, you know, depending on different era. Most of the players that Joe Montana played with, and I know this is the argument. A lot of people will give me that of pro Tom Brady. Most of the guys Joe Montana played with, there was no free agency. It wasn't like it is today, where after a certain amount of years, the guy's free to go wherever, and they sadly had a salary cap to deal with, and guys would be cut if they didn't want to take a pay cut, and then they would go to another team. So, and the fact is, name the Hall of Fame except for 1, and that one didn't even win a Super Bowl with. The wide receivers Tom Brady play with. And I know I'm sounding like, well, you're pushing this for Brady, but I'm just trying to give you both sides of the spectrum here. Tom Brady didn't have, other than Randy Moss, a Hall of Fame caliber wide receiver. Just thinking about the ones that he's had throughout the years. Now, I didn't say that they were bad, but they weren't Hall of Fame type of wide receivers. They weren't a Jerry Rice type of wide receiver. They weren't Michael Irvin type of wide receiver. Just that's what I'm trying to say. He had good wide receivers, decent wide receivers, quite naturally, and they performed for him well. But he didn't have, and never drafted a wide receiver of the skill level of the tight end they have now, Rob Gronkowski. That's what I'm talking about here. But that's part of what we're talking about. We're going to talk about the historical significance of the Super Bowl. We also want to talk about the game itself. Definitely want to talk about that. And it will also, and it's not in any particular order right now, of just laying out what we're going to be talking about the Hall of Fame. And what the hell, in my opinion, were some of these Hall of Fame voters thinking about? Now, I had this, and that's what we're going to talk about first. We're going to talk about the Hall of Fame. They had an NFL Honors show last night where DeMarco Murray won the Offensive Player of the Year. J.J. Watt won the Defensive Player of the Year. My boy Le'Veon Bell, which I've been touting all year, and I've told you, and I did the same thing with Jamal Charles. If you've been listening to me, over the years, I've given you Arian Foster when he wasn't thought of that well. And the reason I'm saying this is because it's history. It's a track record. I'm not blowing my own horn, but I am, because I want you to know I just don't spout out here and talk about things. And I quite naturally, I don't get everything right. But for the last 2 years, and I'll say this, for the last 2 years, you go back and check my track record, go back to the archives. And when I say archives, you can go back to the just before the beginning of that season. Beginning of this season, I was pumping up Le'Veon Bell big time. Big time. And what happened? At the NFL honor show last night, he became the NFL.com top fantasy player. NFL.com MVP. Last year, I was touting the heck out of, not last year, but the 2013-2014 season. Before the season started. And way before that, I've been pumping this boy up. But it pumped him up. And I said he would have a monster season. And he did. Talking about Jamal Charles, 2013-2014 NFL.com Fantasy Player of the Year. Back to back. I love my running backs. I love my running backs. Come the 2015-2016 season, come August, I'll have a player that I'm pumping up. Could be a obscure, or I would say obscure, but under the radar running back, and I have a few in my head right now, but I'm not going to reveal them. I still have to see how things are going to pan out in the off season, leading up to the preseason, leading up to regular season, before I give you it. And it's going to be sometime in August, because I go through this. July, August time frame leading up to the to your fantasy leading up to your fantasy draft days. I break down position by position by position, and the last position I break down is running back, and I've been pretty much spot on with calling out my running backs and who I think is going to bust out or have the year. Now, I know DeMarco Murray was Offensive Player of the Year. But guess what, people? Le'Veon Bell had over 2,000 combined yards. Not just running the football, but catching a hell of a lot of balls out of the backfield in that Todd Haley offense in Pittsburgh. So, hope you tune in. I hope you're with me. Come August, when I break down the running backs for fantasy from, 32 all the way up to number one. With some sleepers. With some sleepers, because there's always guys in there, rookies coming in that are showing out or whatever, and I throw them in there also. So tune in for that. That's just something I would just throw out there for now. But my forte, and I've always said it, and guys that know me, play fantasy football with me, and follow my shows, either on the Master Plan or the FSP, which is on 1 o'clock on Saturday, Eastern Standard Time, or the FSP Cruise Show, which is 8 o'clock p.m. on Thursday, know that, for the most part, I know my running backs. Foundation, in my opinion, foundation of every fantasy football team that you can have is running backs, in my opinion. I'm just saying. But I digressed. Let's get back to the subject at hand, which is this show, overall, this show, the things they want to cover. Hall of Fame. In the NFL honors, we'll revert back to that because that's when they revealed who the Hall of Fame inductees are going to be at the Hall of Fame weekend. Excuse me. And there were some surprises. Now, I'll run down a list of who was eligible. or who were made the final cut, or the semifinal cut, I should say. The final cut was last night. And then we'll go from there. We have a kicker. And you're probably going to get that every year. A kicker is going to be in there because, and I debated this on over on the FSP show. Why do you have to, for the most part, cover every position? Well, they didn't do it this year, but for the most part, over the years, they've been covering every position. It's like a quota. They got to have a quarterback in there. They got to have a running back in there. They got to have a wide receiver in there, an offensive line, offensive lineman, a defensive lineman, maybe a linebacker. And you know what I'm saying? Or, and a tight end. They didn't have any tight ends this year that were nominated that made the semifinal cut. Let me put it that way. But let me run down the list of guys that were up for it until last night. Morton Anderson, fine kicker, drafted in 1982, 90 points each of 22 seasons and topped 114 times in his 25-year career. He was nominated. Jerome Bettis, the bus, who rushed for 1,000 yards 8 times, ranked 5th all-time in career rushing yards. When he retired, and was the Super Bowl winner, and let the help the Pittsburgh win a Super Bowl with Ben Roethlisberger. Tim Brown, wide receiver who's been on the list for quite a few years, he's nearing the end of his eligibility, and he's on the list. Don Coryell, head coach, innovator, introduced a passing system decades ahead of his time. Coryell first brought the St. Louis Cardinals out of the doldrums, going 42-27-1 in 5 years. The coach then installed Air Coryell, and for those who know the AFL and AFC, when he took over the offense in San Diego with Dan Fouts, was a, like I said, an innovator. Terrell Davis, TD, had a short career, but he had an outstanding career with all-time, three-time All-Pro, 1998 NFL MVP, topped 2,000 yards in 1998, helped lead the ground game with the Broncos and back-to-back Super Bowl wins in 1997 and 1998. Tony Dungy, first African American coach to win a Super Bowl, used to play for the. He was a coach for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and also that's where he won his Super Bowl. And he also moved to Indianapolis, where he won another Super Bowl. Excuse me. He set the team up in Tampa Bay, but didn't reap the rewards because they brought in John Gruden. But for all intents and purposes, that was Tony Dungy's team. But John Gruden took it to the next level. But he got his it's just due when he went to Indianapolis and got them to win a Super Bowl in. Super Bowl 41, whatever it is. Kevin Green, defensive end and linebacker. Charles Haley should have gotten in a long time ago. Only player in NFL history to win 5 Super Bowls. 2 with the 49ers, 3 with the Cowboys. And he has 100-plus sacks for his career. Marvin Harrison, in that high-powered offense in Indianapolis, had a 12-year career, math super huge numbers while he was a member of the Indianapolis Colts. Jimmy Johnson, another innovator, innovated the coach that took over a downtrodden Cowboys team, brought them back from where they were to win two Super Bowls back-to-back when he was there, and also had the same team that was taken over with had another team. It had the same team when he left, win another Super Bowl after he had left. Orlando Pace was part of that the greatest team on turf when they won the Super Bowl. Talk about the St. Louis Rams, and they were three All Pros, and it was a hell of an offensive tackle. Bill Polian, he was part of that. He was part of teams that made five Super Bowl appearances. Let's take this out. Bill Polian was the GM for the Buffalo Bills, who went to four straight Super Bowls, but never to win any of them. And then he was also the architect of getting the players in line in Indianapolis and eventually winning a Super Bowl there. Junior Seau, unfortunately, he passed away, but he was a dominant linebacker when he was an active member of the NFL. Will Shields, played in 224 straight games from his rookie season until his retirement in 2006. Talking about reliable, first team All-Pro three times, and he blocked on NFL's best scoring offense featuring running back Priest Holmes in 2002 and 2003. Mick Tinglehoff, who was a member of the senior nominees, played back between 1962 and 1978 for the Minnesota Vikings. Five-time All-Pro, anchored a Vikings offensive line that helped win 10 division titles from 1968 to 1978, and appeared in four Super Bowls. Kurt Warner, quite naturally, you know the story of Kurt Warner, from bagging groceries to the MVP twice, and MVP of the Super Bowl. He was the quarterback of the greatest team on turf. And last but not least, Ron Wolf, who was a part of the Raiders, building the Raiders team that won nine division titles and appeared in three Super Bowls, went to Green Bay where he assembled a roster that claimed three straight NFC Central titles and won Super Bowl 31. And he's viewed as one of the best talent evaluators in NFL history. Now, out of all those, if you didn't see the NFL Honors show last night, who would you have thought we've got in there? Well, right off the bat, there was only one guy in the senior finalists for the class of 2015, Mick Tinglehoff. So, in my opinion, he was an automatic. He goes in there. I'll start with the running backs, where there were only two. Who would you rather have taken? Jerome Bettis, with 1,000 yards eight times and ranked fifth all-time in career rushing yards. And quite naturally, we called him a bust. Or would you have taken Terrell Davis, MVP of the league at one point, only a handful of running backs that ran for over 2,000 yards in one season, three-time All-Pro, and the NFL MVP? Jerome Bettis got in there. Okay? Let's go with the wide receiver. You got two of them, Tim Brown and Marvin Harrison. Harrison posted eight consecutive 1,000-yard seasons with 10 or more touchdowns, a three-time All-Pro, and he shattered the record for receptions in a single season with 143 in 2002. Or would you go with Tim Brown, setting multiple franchise records and finishing with the second highest total receiving yards in NFL history. Finished with 100 receiving touchdowns. They went with Tim Brown. Let's go to offensive linemen. You got offensive lineman Orlando Pace, who was one of the anchors on that offensive line for the Greatest Show on Turf. And blocked for a line that, he led an offensive line to block for three straight NFL MVPs. That would have to be a hell of a feat. And he was one of the dominant tackles of his generation. Or would you go with Will Shields, who was the definition of durability, was named first team All-Pro three times, and only played in 24 straight games until he retired. They went Will Shields. How about the defensive lineman / linebacker? Junior Seau went, which is given to me. And Charles Haley finally got in, and Kevin Green didn't, but Josh Haley finally got in, which this is one of the things I've said. This is about time he got in. Five time on a winning Super Bowl team. Two with the 49ers and two with the 49ers, three with the Cowboys. And it wasn't just like he was just there. When teams played against the Cowboys or the 49ers, when Charles Haley was on that team, they had a game plan for Charles Haley because he was that much of a disruptive force. So out of all these guys so far that I'm saying, Charles Haley is the most deserving out of all of them. And then the surprise of the night, in my opinion, was that not just Bill Polian getting in as a nominee/contributor to the game, John Wolf got in as a contributor. Now, I can't recall when two nominees got in that were a contributor versus an actual player that played in the game. I'm totally blown away with that. Now, the two surprises, one more than the other, was that, and I think those two contributors, one of them took the guy I'm going to talk about's position in the Hall of Fame. You got two contributors that are going into the Hall of Fame. Now, I can't dispute both of them, but I can dispute both of them going in at the same time. Talking about Bill Polian and Ron Wolf. Now, of the two, the more, I would say more popular, but the guy with the more exposure would be Bill Polian. You've seen him on ESPN. You've seen him on various programs and on radio talking about football. So, for the most part, a lot of guys, when they get a lot of exposure, they're on the top of the voters' minds. And they say, yeah, let's put him in. Ron Wolf is more of a behind-the-scenes type of guy. And I would think that I would put Ron Wolf in before I would have put Bill Polian. And I know Bill Polian had to deal with teams that had to do five Super Bowls. I understand that. Four with the Buffalo Bills and with the Indianapolis Colts. I understand that. But in my opinion, the best guy with the best ability to evaluate talent and have that talent show it out on the field is Ron Wolf. And he got in. What I am surprised about, two guys, one more so than not. I'm surprised about Tim Brown getting in. I'm not a real Tim Brown fan, and I'm surprised he got in. But he was near, you know, sometimes some of these guys, they near the end of their eligibility, and they, for some reason, they happen to get in. I think the same thing that happened with Art Monk. But what I am surprised, extremely surprised, is that and I didn't know this until I saw the nominees this past week when I was looking at them. I couldn't believe this guy was not in. He still got a ways to go to get in, and I don't know if he's ever going to get in. But I'm talking about Eric Coryell. I'm talking about before there was a greatest show on turf in St. Louis, there was a greatest show in Southern California with the San Diego Chargers, with Don Coryell as the ringleader with, I can't believe I can't remember this guy's football name now, and I just mentioned it, with the quarterback of the San Diego Chargers that was the orchestrator actually doing what Don Coryell designed on the chalkboard. Don Coryell. One of the innovators, if not the innovator of the passing game, modern day passing game in the NFL. And this guy is not in the Super Bowl. I mean, not in the Hall of Fame. He introduced a passing system decades ahead of his time. Dan Fouts, that's the quarterback. That's the quarterback that was the orchestrator of that passing game that Don Coryell drew up. And it was I'm telling you, if you ever watched, excuse me, if you ever watched the San Diego Chargers back in the 70s, excuse me, back in the 70s, late 70s, early 80s, thing of beauty. Best passing game, and I know a lot of people dispute that the St. Louis Rams was the greatest show on turf. Trust me, people, when I'm telling you this, if you are as old as I am and were able to watch some of the greatest athletes back in the 70s and 80s, especially in this passing game that they had in San Diego with Kellen Winslow and company, Charlie Joyner. Unbelievable what they could do. And talking about ringing up some points, talking about being innovative and capturing the AFC Western crown in the 79 to 81, 3 years in a row. That's how dominant they were. And whoever went up against them knew they had to score some points to stay in the game. Otherwise, they would get blown out. And he is not in the Hall of Fame? Are you kidding me? He innovated, he introduced the passing system decades ahead of his time. He was an innovator. Now, I thought that if you're some type of first or some type of innovator, that you would punch your ticket to the Hall of Fame. This is a classic example of a guy that was ahead of his time and should be recognized for it. I got a caller on the line. I do know who it is, and I'm glad that he's calling me on it on Super Bowl Sunday. My esteemed co-host from Thursday night, Jeff the Joker. What's up, my man? How you doing?
Morning, Jerry. I'm very good. Thank you. What's going on with you?
Nothing much, man. I just happened to be talking about the Hall of Fame right now, and the guys I saw getting the Hall of Fame, and the disappointment of a few guys that didn't make it. And one of them, and we've been talking back and forth a little in the chat room, was Don Coryell. I thought, and I'll let you talk. I thought that Don Coryell was in the Hall of Fame already. Until I saw the list of guys that are eligible this year, I was surprised. I just thought an innovator, just like I said, and someone that introduced something to the game that no one had done before would be a shoo-in, a lock, especially with the kind of numbers that his offense put up when he was in San Diego. And he's still not in. What's your thoughts on that?
You know, something you neglected to mention. Before the Chargers, Coryell had some very good offenses with the St. Louis Cardinals. You know, the Cardinals then weren't, they were known as one of the worst teams in the NFL, but they actually made the playoffs one of those years in the mid-70s, which was a big deal because, you know, they were usually, you know, fighting with the Giants for last place in the old NFC East.
Right.
The thing is, you know, I can probably research it, I think, but you're probably right. Usually you don't see more than one contributor in one Hall of Fame class, but I guess,
right.
You know, maybe it was an unwritten rule, but maybe it's not, you know, because a lot of the process, I think, is kind of private. I don't have a problem with it is notable because there's a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff, but
mm-hmm.
the Hall of Fame is picky, like it should be. Now, also with Coryell, a lot of people, I mean, Hall of Fame members have talked about putting him in the Hall of Fame.
Sure.
It's surprising, and he probably will go in eventually, but unfortunately, he passed away a few years ago, so he won't get to enjoy it. I mean, it'll still be something nice for his family, but it'd been a heck of a lot nicer if he could have got that honor when he's alive. The NFL Hall of Fame is picky, as it should be, because it's not just the Hall of Good Players. So everybody has a couple guys who they wish were in there. Mike too, no shock. Phil Sims, and the big one is Otis Anderson. But I'm okay with them not being in there, because I'd rather have them not be in there than have it look diluted. And I think Anderson is worthy. I definitely think he's worthy. Another thing, taking nothing away from Coryell as an innovator in the passing game, he was the beneficiary of very good timing with the Chargers because, you know, 1978 was kind of like a landmark year in the NFL. That's when they changed the rules to make it easier for the passing game. The thing is, though, it was the same rules for everybody. Just Coryell was better able to take advantage of it. But to me, like, 78 was such a big year in the NFL because they look modest now, but compared to the previous year, the passing numbers exploded. And that was the first year when they moved from – they expanded from a 14-game to a 16-game schedule. And that was kind of like, to me, and, you know, I was really little at the time, but I remember that was like the beginning of the real modern NFL. I think most people would say it was after the merger, but I'm too young to remember that. But that was, I think 78, Fouts threw for 4,000 yards that season, which was only the second time that had ever been done. I think Namath did it one year in the AFL. And now 4,000 yards in a season for a quarterback is not even a big deal anymore, which is nuts.
What?
But back then it was huge. And, I kind of wish there was a little more transparency about the Hall of Fame, but the thing is, it's still better than a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which is a total joke because there's zero transparency whatsoever. And there's for every great rock band that's in there, it seems that there's two that aren't, and there's no rhyme or reason to it. And in baseball, the Baseball Hall of Fame is complicated now because of the steroids and a lot of politics and whatnot. But it used to be with baseball. Yeah, exactly. But it used to be with the Baseball Hall of Fame before the numbers got crazy with the steroids. It was very much based on stats, which is more appropriate for baseball than football, because football you have, you know, offensive linemen who don't get, those type of statistics like the other players.
Right.
But in baseball, it was if a guy had 400 homers and or 3,000 hits, you knew for sure he was going in. You know what I mean? I don't think they had any official minimum requirement, but it was, you just knew. You just knew certain statistical plateaus would almost guarantee a trip to the Hall of Fame. And, you know, not every Hall of Fame is like that. And, yeah, but the worst, if you want to get aggravated, if you follow rock music, look at the Hall of Fame, who's in there and who's not. There's no rhyme or reason to it at all. There's so many great players who you just assume are in the Football Hall of Fame. I'm okay with that because it just goes to show how great you have to be. Like one of them, Lester Hayes. And I think part of that is, I don't know if it's intentional, he didn't do interviews because he stuttered. And I think that gets held against him, I think.
Yep.
Or maybe because there's already so many other Raiders in there. I'm not sure, but that guy was the best corner of his era.
You're right. And that's another pet peeve of mine. Why do you have to be friendly with the media? And it's not just football. It's almost every sport. I think the only sport that it really doesn't be held against you, and I don't follow it enough to really know, is maybe hockey. But I know baseball, I know basketball, and I know football, that if you're not friendly with the media, come Hall of Fame time, if you have the close to the stats, or you have the stats to get into the Hall of Fame, if you're not really one of the most popular players, meaning popular with the media and with the fans, even if you're popular with the fans and you're not popular with the media, there's a strong shot that they're either going to wait and not put you in the first ballot, or you're just going to have to hold your hands, hold your breath every time you're up for it until the media that you were unfriendly with decides to put you in. And that's bad.
That's the way life is, unfortunately. I think that's why Art Monk had to wait. One of the reasons, or the biggest reason why he had to wait so long to get into the NFL Hall of Fame was he didn't do interviews. And I think to him, he just was one of these no-frills kind of guys, you know, wasn't a big talker. You know, maybe he got a little aggravated with the media early in his career. But, you know, he didn't have any antics. You know what I'm saying? He wasn't that kind of guy. From the impression I get about him, he just was a serious kind of guy. And, it's kind of ironic that, you know, Monk stick of a vow of silence, you know, whatever. But, you know, it's funny. You got freedom of speech, which a lot of people misinterpret. Doesn't mean you're free from the consequences. It means the government can't arrest you for saying something politically unpopular. But also, I think you should have the freedom not to speak, which, you know, some of these players, they don't get it. They only like the media when they can manipulate them for free advertising. But, you know, it's not that simple. And but I'll tell you, you know, Marshawn Lynch, I think a lot of people, they don't like him because of the way he looks or whatever, you know.
I think they have a lot to do with that, Jeff. Well, you know, and the thing about it – go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But the thing is, it's like he's being a fool about with getting fined for not talking to the media. You know, I'll tell you, you know he's not married because no wife would put up with pissing away that much money on fines. I mean, he's being foolish because, you know, he's got this foundation in his hometown of Oakland, and – if, you know, he did, you know, occasional interviews, that would probably get more money for his foundation. And now, who knows, you know, you still hear about the foundation, but who wants to give money to a guy who acts so immature? And he's, you know, I think he might be trying to be a role model for these kids, but he's not being a smart role model, you know. He's not being very mature about it. I don't get it. I don't get it.
Well, from what I understand is this, that when he was in, I think either in college or a combination of being in college and being with his first team, which was the Buffalo Bills, he's had more than one bad experience with the media, and that kind of like shut him down. And if you, and I don't know how to say this, but if you know guys from California that are from the hood, they're suspicious of, and it's nothing against you, against white America as it is. So if you have a bad experience, him being from, he went to California in college, not the state, but the University of California in college, And then he went to Buffalo, and supposedly he had, like I said, bad experiences with the media that he dealt with in college and also the media that he dealt with in Buffalo. It just made him that more skeptical and suspicious of the media altogether. So he, instead of dealing with it, this is the way he deals with it, not saying anything at all, or now saying just a minimal or making appearances so he doesn't have to pay the hefty fine that Roger Goodell is over and over giving him. Now, from what Roger Goodell is saying, insinuated in his State of the League press conference, is that there's maybe a possibility, even though Marshawn Lynch appeared and didn't say the words that the media or the NFL wanted to come out, I'm just here so I won't get fined, and other short phrases, they may fine him, who knows, after the Super Bowl for his conduct at these press conferences, which is going to be probably hotly contested with the NFLPA. So we'll see what happens. So I don't know. I mean, in my opinion, he comes there. He doesn't want to talk. He's not comfortable talking to the media. As long as he appears and he tells them, "Look, I'm not talking," or "I'm telling, this is all I'm saying," and they keep asking him questions, and he says, "Look, this is all I'm saying," and they keep asking him questions. "Look, this is all I'm saying." Well, who's at fault of that? He comes there, tells them, "Look, this is what I'm saying. I'm not, you know, I don't like talking to y'all. I'm not comfortable talking to y'all. So, and this is all I'm saying, so I won't get myself in trouble. I won't say the wrong thing. So this is the only thing I'm sticking to. One little catchphrase or a script. What I'm saying. This is all I'm saying." And the media keeps over and over and over again. Now, some reporters get pissed off saying that, "Well, you're not giving us anything." Well, it's not like he's surprising anybody. He's saying, "Look, I'm not comfortable talking to you guys, and the only thing I'm comfortable saying is this, or this. Now, I understand, Marshawn Lynch, from what I understand, it does a lot, especially a lot in this community, that goes behind the scenes, and a lot of media guys really don't put it out there. They only put out what they're saying that he doesn't say. But he does a lot of things back in Oakland, back in the hood, to help kids like himself get brought up and be able to succeed in other venues other than football. But a lot of people are looking at Marshawn Lynch with the dreadlocks, with the baseball cap, with the sunglasses, and have an idea of what Marshawn Lynch is like. And the media will help promote that when he won't talk and piss him off. And that's that popularity contest. That's the political side of the NFL, which a lot of people don't want to talk about. But it's in your face right now. It's obvious. A lot of people, including Mike Francesa, was really pissed off at Marshawn Lynch for the fact that he won't talk. But if they go back in his history, they understand why he won't talk, because he's had bad experiences before he got to Seattle, and he doesn't trust the media, plain and simple. Doesn't trust him. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, but the thing is, you know, I mean, believe it or not, not the same, but similar issues as an adult. You kind of, sometimes you got to move on, you know. I mean, I can't blame him for not being thrilled about it, but, you know, his bad experience, you know, I mean, that was a long time ago. I mean, yeah, I could hold a grudge for a long time, but, you know, as an adult, especially in the workplace, sometimes you got to be the bigger person, even if you're faking it. You know what I'm saying? And a similar issue, I was just talking about this with a close friend, that at his job, they wanted some feedback about his boss, who he had a good working relationship for. And sometimes places go fishing sometimes if they don't like somebody. And
Yep.
And the thing is, another thing, sometimes in a work situation, they'll tell you something is anonymous, but it's not.
No, you're right.
See,
you're right.
You know what I'm saying? And this is the thing, you just learn from experience and you learn to be careful. Yep. And because sometimes anonymous is that, and a lot of times it's not. It's not worth risking your job or the harmony at your job or whatever for some bozo who says it's going to be anonymous, but it's not. So this you know, but you know, you don't walk around with a chip on your shoulder because of it. You just, you know, smile to yourself and you know, and you have to act a little, not much, and yeah, you move on, you know. I mean, when I'm in that situation, I don't say, oh, I don't believe you clowns. I just say, oh, I have nothing to say, you know.
Well, that's in essence what Marshawn Lynch is saying. And he coined it pretty eloquently last year when Deion Sanders was interviewing him, and he didn't give that many words to him, but he gave Deion something that it just come to my mind. And that he said, I'm a back that action, boss. That's all he's about. He's not about talking and saying the company line or the standard. Just take it one day at a time, and what all the other catchphrases. This guy is about keeping it real, and a lot of America, if he opened up, wouldn't be ready for him to keep it real. Because this guy, regardless of what anybody thinks, is from the hood. And he talks like he's from the hood. And he may not act like he's from the hood, but his talk is from the hood. And it more or less, if he talked the way people wanted him to talk, not just the right words, but talking the way he normally talks, like he talks with his fellows, most of America will probably be offset and surprised. No harm. That's just the way he is. So rather than go through all that, he says the minimal or nothing at all. But let's move on. We only got only about 7 minutes left in this. And I want to get one guy that I was slightly surprised. I thought he would definitely get in there. I knew it was on the edge of TD versus Jerome Bettis getting there. I didn't think both of them were getting it. I think at least one of them. And Jerome Bettis went out, which is fine. I wasn't really overly surprised about that. But I was really surprised about Kurt Warner not getting in there. And the more and more I thought about it, I said, I'm really surprised. You know, and I'm trying to think who would I have left out. Of the guys that got in, and I would have to go back to the contributors. I mean, they were contributors to the game. I understand that, but the other ones besides the contributors were the ones that actually played the game, the ones that actually put up the numbers, the ones that actually were MVPs or stars or won Super Bowls or different kinds of league awards. I'm really surprised that Kurt Warner did not get in this year. What's your thoughts on that?
I agree. You know, Warner's work is so impressive.
Yep.
And I've heard different interpretations, but, you know, if you look at the whole body of work, it's there, you know?
Yep.
I mean, just the production numbers are there, but also you got the big games because that's important, especially for a quarterback. And it's not that relevant, but he's got a great story and everything else. But he's got the achievements. But you know, even more so than the story, you just look at the you know the black and white, you know the Super Bowl appearances and all the yards and whatever. I think he's going to go in, and I don't think he's going to have to wait too long. But for whatever reason, I'm not sure why. I'll tell you, with Tim Brown, he was. For years, there was that log jam. It was him, Andre Reed, and Chris Carter. Remember that? For years,
sure.
It was those three guys were waiting to get in there. And now, I mean, the bar is set so high for wide receivers as far as production goes. So last year it was Reed. I think it was a year or two before it was Carter. And I thought Brown might have been the odd man out.
Yeah, you're right. The last year was Reed. The year before was Chris Carter.
Right.
And Tim Brown got in. So it was
And Brown made a little mistake, which I thought they were going to make him pay for, because a year or two ago, he accused Bill Callahan of throwing the Super Bowl.
Yep. That was last year. That was last year before they announced the nominees.
And I thought to myself, this is something a lot, you know, like many NFL players, I don't know if he still is, but Tim Brown was doing some, broadcasting, and a lot of these guys do. And most of these guys, they don't bite the hand that feeds them.
Yep.
And
right.
For him just to even accuse, and he had nothing to back it up with, for him to accuse him of that, I'm thinking, man, somebody's going to try to make him pay for that.
Of course. You know, regardless of what people may think, these pro sports are very political. Very, very political. Regardless of, you have your ability, but in order to get that ability, sometimes you got to play the political game within the sport to get the opportunity. And I thought he had torpedoed his opportunity last year. Well, quite naturally, he didn't get in. And I thought he had torpedoed it for years to come. But of the three that we talked about, Chris Carter, Andre Reed, and now Tim Brown, in succeeding years, are in one, two of them in the Hall of Fame, and one's going to be inducted into the Hall of Fame come August. All right, we got about a little more than 2 minutes left in the game. Left in the show. Let's talk briefly about the Super Bowl. Okay, we got the Seattle Seahawks, Legion of Boom, versus the All-American boy in Tom Brady, and the dark Darth Vader in Bill Belichick, and the New England Patriots, one-time Super Bowl champion, trying to be an historic back-to-back champion, youngest ever to do it, in Russell Wilson, versus Tom Brady trying to join that elite class of Joe Montana, his boyhood hero, and the other one is Terry Bradshaw, being a four-time Super Bowl champion quarterbacks. But Tom Brady, regardless if he wins or loses, is going to be in his sixth Super Bowl appearance, which is mind-boggling, to say the least, that you could be a starting quarterback and going to your sixth Super Bowl with the possibility of winning your fourth and joining only two other guys in NFL history to win four. What's your thoughts, and who do you like in this game?
Okay, we talked about this a little on Thursday. I think the deciding factor is going to be the Seattle defense. Unfortunately, and I thought they had momentum. The Patriots have momentum too. Now, I'm a little concerned. The Seahawks look a little banged up on that defense. Now, hopefully that's not an issue, but it could be, because you never get the straight facts on that. But, it's just one game. Sometimes in an injury, you can suck it up for a game or whatever, and you really don't get the straight facts on it. I don't know. I like Seattle. But, you never know. This could even come down to special teams. It might be a close game. Now, the thing is, it's unlikely Seattle would get behind a lot. But if they did, that's a problem, because they don't have a big-time passing game. You know what I mean? I don't see them overcoming a big deficit, but they don't play in that – they don't have that situation a lot. So – this could be a very close game, but I think Seattle's going to win, and I also want Seattle to win because I don't like some of the nonsense with the Patriots. I'm all for being creative, with the bringing in, having six eligible receivers and making one of them ineligible. To me, that's creativity. I don't have a problem with that, but some of this other nonsense is over the line. And, if the Patriots don't win, everybody dug up the whole Spygate thing again because of the inflation thing. And this is going to seriously tarnish that legacy.
All right. Well, I have to agree with you, Jeff. I am a Seahawk promoter this today, and partly for the reason that I despise the Patriots, and that maybe that's back from my when I used to be a Jet fan, but I definitely despise the Patriots, and I do believe that they do a little bit of underhanded things to at all costs win. That seems like to be their MO, regardless of what anybody has to say about that, especially if you're from the New England area, Boston area, or being a New England Patriots fan. But I do like the Seahawks, and I think and I said this on Thursday, I said it yesterday, and I'll say it again today. I think it's a mirror image of last year, where a strong offense is going up against a strong defense. And the strong defense, meaning the Seattle Seahawks, prevailed. I know that two Hall of Fame quarterbacks that are pocket quarterbacks that don't move around, that like to throw from the pocket, which is ideal for ball hawking and a pass rushing team like the Seattle Seahawks. That happened last year with the high-powered offense they had last year in the Denver Broncos. The New England Patriots don't have as high powered an offense. I think they're going to try to run the ball to negate that pass rush, but I don't think they're going to be able to run the ball that effectively. And when they don't, their record is not as good as when they do. If you run over for over 100 yards or so, I think the Patriots are 46-1. So I don't think they're going to be able to run for over 100 yards. I think you're going to have to rely on Tom Brady, and that's going to fall right into the wheelhouse of the Seahawks defense. And from what I've seen last year, I think it's not going to be a huge score and a blowout like it was last year, but I think the Seattle Seahawks are going to prevail. All right, Jeff, I really appreciate you calling in and sharing your knowledge and sharing your opinion on Hall of Fame inductees, especially Don Coryell, who I really liked. I was a fan of his offense, and I really liked watching that offense work. Back in the day, when he was in there at 78 to 83 or whatever it was, I was in the 20s, and I was able to appreciate all that good stuff. Anyway, like I said, I want to thank you for joining me. I want you to make sure that you party and party well, but don't party too much. If you have to drink, don't drive. Give the key to somebody else. Give the key to somebody else. Let them drive you home. Hopefully, they're sober. That they don't have to deal with that. I hope you got a designated driver. Or if you're not going anywhere and you're partying at home, make sure any of your guests don't drink and drive. That's very important. Even if you have to drive them home yourself and bring back the car to your spot, just as long as they get home without getting behind the wheel and jeopardizing themselves and someone else. Enjoy the Super Bowl. People out there, enjoy the Super Bowl. Hopefully your team, who you're rooting for, or even if you're just rooting for a good game, if that's what it is, or you're a fan of one team or the other, they win. And enjoy your friends. This is just like another holiday of the many holidays that we celebrate during the year. So enjoy it. Have a good time with it, but be safe. And I'll talk to you next week, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, same place, same bat channel. With that being said, we are out of here. See ya.
Let's go. Ain't no room for hesitation up in here. It's time to leave it on the field. Because it's game time. It's time to make your hard work pay off. Make your mom and dad proud. Make your opponent pay the price. It's time to step up and get it done, son. You go hard or you go home. From the first whistle to the last. Bring it all day, every play. Because you know your boys are going to put on the line for you. They got your back, so you better have theirs. This is about the team. It's about pride. It's about who's the hungriest. So what's it going to be, man? You going to leave it on the field, or you going to leave it inside? You going to leave it or something in your tank? Or you going to do what champions do? Leave nothing. Leave nothing.